traveling the world searching for equestrians of all breeds. The journey starts now on the International Equine Network.
Hi, good afternoon, equestrians. This is Scott Miller coming to you live from Delray Beach, Florida at Sunshine Meadows Equestrian Village. Ready for a good week. Hope everybody had a great New Year's, a great holiday. Hope all the things pan out for you. You know, you get on your schedule, get on your plan, you know, hit it and get it for 2024. That's what it's all about. We got a lot of things going on here today. We're kind of getting some things lined out here at the International Equine Network. All of our goals that we're going to try to hit this year, we hope we do. We've done a lot of schooling over the last couple of years on programming and the way things are going and, you know, just what needs to be done in the equine industry. I tell you what, I think we're going to have a good year. I think we're really going to have a good year because people are starting to realize exactly what the horse business means to people in the international and domestic theater. It's really important that we do things and keep our communities in mind of what we do in the horse business. We're a vital part of the economic impact of each community and each state and each country. The horse business is a giving business. They try to do the best they can, and whatever sets them back, they just go right ahead with it and keep going. And just to prove the point, in Japan, they had a lot of situations in Japan. They canceled all their activities through January 5th. They've had a lot of disastrous situations there. I mean, it was bad. They had a New Year's Day earthquake that devastated parts of the western Japan, has impacted the thoroughbred racing there. And the horse racing industry, they have turned their racetrack into, a helper. They're a very, very big helper. I tell you, it's they're getting money to the people. They're getting help them with housing. They're doing with all kinds of things there, and that's why they canceled racing until today. They'll start back tomorrow on January 6th. But they've come to aid of their community. They're helping with housing. They had a 7.6 magnitude earthquake. And it's just devastating that you can do. What can you do when that happens? Well, I'll tell you what you can do. The horse industry stepped up, and they're starting to help with housing and food and you name it, they're doing it. And that's great that they do that. And that would happen anywhere at any track. Anytime we've had a disaster anywhere in the tracks that we have here in the States, they've always been there to help. And that just goes to show you what a valuable part of the community the equestrian industry is. It's not thoroughbreds, but it's, you know, quarter horses, show horses, standard bred horses. They're all right there to help in the community. And why do we do that? It's because the community gives to the horse industry so much. They're a vital part of what we do and how we do it. And it's exciting, you know, to be a part of that industry. But yet it's even more exciting when you can help out your local community with the things that we do. So, you know, that's a good thing right there. It was a bad end of the year in Japan and other places, but it was a good year to start out because they've got a lot of help and support from the horse industry, and that's what it's all about. Again, we're talking about distribution and information here at International Equine Network. The British racing to launch a premier marketing incentive or initiative. Sorry about that. They're going in and they're working with the communities. They're creating races. They're doing all kinds of things that need to be done to get people into, watch the races. As a part of the 2024 fixture list, there's 170 meetings, which are racing entities that'll be in Europe. And they're going to be really pushing, the programs there, the race programs, come out and visit the tracks. They're going to be doing a lot of things to get people involved with it. And that's really good. When you're talking about 170 meetings or, race schedules that they have over there, I'm telling you, you can't go anywhere without seeing, a racing event, in Europe. And that's really good because it's part of their culture, their heritage. And so everybody's trying to, get things going and rolling in the right direction and just do whatever they can to help promote the business for us. And that's a good thing. So just Google horse racing wherever you're at, whatever country you're in, whatever city you're in, and it'll pop up and you'll see what kind of local horse events that you have. And they're really something to go to, from the smallest one to the biggest one. It's great. It's great to go out and just relax and see the horses. And, you don't have to own one. You don't have to ride one. You don't have to train one, take care of one. You can just go out and visit the local equine events in your area and just see what they have. It's exciting. It's exciting to do. And one of the exciting things that I like is a trainer named Billy Mott. This guy is just unbelievable. Billy is considering another Middle East trip with Casa Creed. This Casa Creed is a nice horse. He resumed breezing January 3rd in preparation for a potential trip back to Saudi Arabia for the 1351 Turf Sprint on Saudi Cup Day in February 24th. The newly turned 8-year-old worked 3 furlongs at 37-3 on a dirt track at Payson Park in South Florida. A 4-time Grade 1 winner, Casa Creed has experienced most of his success in New York, but has traveled to several lucrative races, including the past 4 Breeders' Cups. Just amazing what this horse can do. His best performance in the Breeders' Cup came in his last start, in which he was third, beaten by half a length by Master of the Seas. The Breeders' Cup Mile at Santa Anita afterward, he turned out for a rest and a vacation a little bit. So he's going to be headed over to Saudi Arabia, and he'll be running over there. Billy said first, second, or third place finish in a $2 million, about a 6.5 furlong dash, would push Casa Creed over the $3 million mark. And, that's just amazing. This horse is an older horse. And Billy Mott can get old horses, young horses, but he's better with old horses than grass horses. He really is. So that's Casa Creed will be headed for Saudi Arabia, it looks like, here in a month or so. Spencer Farm has contributed $50,000 to Light Up Racing. Spencer Farm has made a generous contribution of $50,000 to support the Light Up Racing initiative. Light Up Racing and the community-driven effort dedicated to shaping the future of thoroughbreds horse racing by promoting transparency, awareness, and accountability. The donation from Spencer Farm, one of the most respected breeders in the industry, is a strong statement for the support of Light Up Racing following the path of leadership shown by Fasick Tipton. Spencer Farms owners and presidents Eric Gustafson expressed his thoughts on contribution starting. Our donation demonstrates that our commitment to upholding the highest standards of horse welfare, fostering transparency, and driving positive perception to change our industry. What I like about this now is all these farms that are getting really good messages out there to the general public. For example, like now here in January, they have a lot of the farms starting in January invite the general public out to the farm to see their stallions and to promote their stallions. And it really works good because it gives you a chance to go out and see everybody and see how they're doing and where they're going. And, you know, it's just, it's really something else, you know, that I like to see in our business. You know, people, if they know about the industry, then they can understand the industry. And a lot of times all they see is a, you know, a bad news article, or, you know, here's something, you know, that's happened bad in the industry, in the industry. And what I like about what this initiative is doing is it's giving people the opportunity to see exactly what horses go through. And I'm awful glad that all the farms are starting to join in. And I tell you what, it's a really good family tour for the people. It really is. You go out and you can see them. It's a good family thing. You don't have to know a lot about the horses because when you go there, you'll walk away a little bit with a little bit of education and a little bit of knowledge of what we're going to do here in the industry. And then that way it makes things like the Derby and the Breeders' Cup and the horse shows, it makes them more enjoyable when you start to understand it a little bit more. And, you know, the great thing about it is you don't have to be a rider. You don't have to have a lot of knowledge about the business. You don't have to own a horse. You know, you don't have to have a farm. But it's a good, nice family situation that you can go out and really enjoy it. And I'm telling you, the more education you get on the horse business, the more you enjoy it. You know, it's just not a horse running out in the field. You know, you can be driving by a farm and see some horses running out in the paddock. You know, and I always ask when I was a little kid growing up, are they going to run in the Derby? Are they going to be in the show horse business? You know, what are they going to be? It makes you wonder, you know, where their journey is going to take them when you see them out there. Where have they been? What have they done? You know, like here at Sunshine Meadows, our motto is that we have past, present, and future champions here that are training. And that's what I see when I see the horses out in the field. You know, are those past champions? Are they present champions? Or are they future champions? And when you start looking at the horse business with that attitude, then it gets exciting because then you want to go to the shows and to the races and into the sales and everything. So it's going to be interesting to see. But the Stallion Farms open house schedules will be posted on our website here next week. It's going to be interesting to see. For example, One Star Farm in Lexington will host an open house January 7th, through the 11th, between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. The open house will be held at the Farm Stallion Complex on Paynes Mill Road in Versailles. Visitors are welcome to come and make an appointment to view the One Star roster for 2024. Led by Constitution, and Life is Good, Country Grammar. It's just amazing. Two Phils will be there. It's amazing to walk up and see all these stallions up close and in person that have, you know, won some of the biggest races in our business. And that's at One Star Farm in Lexington. I tell you, it's well worth the visit to, you know, to go out there and see these stallions. It's just, those are the future breeders of Derby winners. And speaking of the Derby, I have a documentary that's being filmed as we speak on everything that we're doing. It's been right here in the office. It's literally started our first filming day. And I'm putting together a nice documentary. It's called How They Get There, the 2024 Kentucky Derby. And this project has been in the makings for many, many, many years. It's taken me a long time to educate myself and to actually experience the things that we're going to be filming for the Kentucky Derby. It's a good example. One of the projects that we're doing is how the horses ride on vans, how they ride on airplanes, and how they ride on ships. A lot of times you might have a country that might be shipping a horse to the States or to Europe, for example, like in Macau or Japan, and they part of their journey is on a boat, a ship. We're going to show how they fly in airplanes. We're going to show you how they transport it on the ground and the preparation that it takes to get them there, how you have to school them to learn to load onto the vans, onto the planes, onto the ships. And that's all part of how they get there. And we're going to talk to owners about how they got into the business, why they buy the horses they do. Do they buy horses to go in training, or do they breed their own as a homebred at their own farm? That's important. We talk about how they're going to be fed and what they're going to be fed and the process of feeding. There's more to just feeding them than just throwing, some grain and hay, in front of them and letting them eat. There's a method, there's a scientific formula that you feed them according to their training. The more they train, the different their feed is. The lighter they train, the different their feed is. It's a little bit lighter, that type of thing. So we're going into that. We're going to go behind the scenes at the sales that are coming up to see how the owners buy horses and why they bought that horse. And, was it the bloodline? Was it the way they look? Because I'll be honest with you, there's a lot of horses that have very, very normal, average bloodlines, and they end up becoming winners, even derby winners. And so that's what the owners have to take a look at. We're going to find out, and we're going to follow two trainers that we'll announce next week. We're going to announce the trainers that we'll be following, and we'll also be naming the owners that we're going to follow for the 2024 Kentucky Derby. But there's a lot more to it than meets the eye. It's just not the, they say it's the fastest 2 minutes in sports, and really there's a lot more to it than that. That's just the end result, and we never do know the end result of a horse race or the derby until they cross the wire at the finish line. And that's what you see a lot on our website. It's a segment called At the Wire, which we have that's live right now on our website. It's At the Wire, showing them races from across the country and where they're at, for example. In Hot Springs, Arkansas, at Oakland Park, they got rain and snow. And snow is coming down like there's no tomorrow there. We've got Aqueduct that's live. We've got Tampa Bay that's live. And those are the things that we do here. And it's all part of how they get there. It's a tremendous project that I've taken on here. And, it's always going to be changing. It's always going to be something different. And this project is just like a horse. We don't know what it's going to be like until we're at the wire. And then we'll know what kind of documentary it's been. We're going to know who was there, how they got there. And, that's just something that we do here. We're going to show you how horses get their shoes put on, how the blacksmith shoes a horse, which is going to be interesting. And you can understand, how they stay on. What they have to do. Do they use a nail or do they glue them on? There's just so much that we do in our blacksmith segment that's going to be really interesting to see. And then when we talk to the owners, like I said, we're going to find out about, you know, why did they buy that horse? Did they breed the horse as a homebred, or did they buy it? And when they do buy it, why do they buy it? You know, what leads them to do that? Was it the bloodline? Was it their confirmation? You know, those are things that, you know, that they look at, you know, here in the horse industry. I tell you, the owner's got the toughest job in the world because he has to allocate the money to buy, you know, the horses. And sometimes they can spend over $1 million for a horse and the horse doesn't run. You know, there's other times that, you know, they spend $30,000 or $40,000 and the horse becomes a grade $1 million winner. You know, we don't know why, you know, horses run like they do. There's no set way to train them. There's thousands of trainers out there and, you know, there's no one right way to do it. I remember one time talking with Woody Stevens, and a reporter says, "Woody," he says, "how did you win 5 Belmonts in a row?" And it was something that's never been done before and will never be done again. Woody told him, he said, "If I could write a book," he said, "I'd write a book on it." And he said, "I'd be making millions of dollars and there'd be, everybody would be training for the Belmont." So, you know, basically what he was saying is there's no right or wrong way to train a horse. And that's for sure. You know what, each horses are individual and you never can tell what, you know, makes them go. And that's the unique part about the business. And the owner has to determine all these things. And the owner has to come in and he's got to get a trainer that fits his style, what he's looking for, that fits the horse. You know, there's so much that trainers do nowadays that unbelievable. And it's hard for a trainer to, you know, get lucky, as they say. A lot of times people say, well, you know, horse racing is luck. You know, he got lucky and won a race. But no, there's a lot to it. And it's all about consistency. And in the horse business, you got to remember that a horse is a creature of habit. They're used to doing the same thing day in and day out. They're used to getting the same feed, the same water, the same training, the same everything, same groom, same rider. You know, that's important to them. They're creatures of habit. And anytime you get that horse out of a habit, you know, what he's used to doing, like, say, shipping to another racetrack, can be very, you know, tough on a horse. And you know, that's, you know, if you upset the apple cart, as they say, you know, then you could literally be going back to, you know, square one, and you got a great horse, but, you know, something changed up in his daily routine, his habit. And all for like for now, we were talking about last year, going into the Derby last year. There's a lot of good horses, a lot of good horses. But along the journey to Churchill Downs, they had issues. Some of them had feet problems. Some of them had shipping problems. Some of them had weather problems. Like, for example, in Hot Springs, Arkansas, they've got snow today. So, you know, the horses that you have getting ready for the Derby are going to experience 4 or 5 days of cold weather, rain and snow. You know, how's that going to affect his training? You know, we really don't know until, you know, the next race that he runs in. And that's what's going to be interesting to see. And those are things that the owner, you know, and the trainer now have to think about. What were the weather conditions? You know, how long was he in it? Was it good? You know, last year they had a lot of rain. They had a lot of rain last year, and the horses that were running, you know, was traveling and you know, at the fairgrounds in New Orleans and the Hot Springs and you know, places like that. You know, it was tough. They had a lot of heat in Florida last year in the winter time. New York was about average. Keeneland was about average. You know, but it's all things that play into the training schedule, and that's what the owner and the trainer, you know, have to think about. And I tell you what, it's a tough road to go. It really is. It's a tough road to go. So now, We got the owner and the trainer trying to get on the same page. They've got a horse now. They're trying to see where he's going to go and how they get there. You know, do you go to Churchill via Hot Springs, Arkansas, or New Orleans, or California? You know, Kentucky, Florida, New York. You know, where do you go? They all have races. You know, that can be won if you go and you got a good horse. And that's one thing about the Kentucky Derby and how they get there. You got to start assimilating the team that we have. You know, we're talking about trainer. We're talking about owners. We're talking about transportation, feed, blacksmith. You know, the whole long nine yards. And then you got to put in there the thing from you know, if a horse is gets hurt. You know, you got to lay him up. You're going to miss training. You know, how many days can you miss in training? Now, going to the Derby right now, it's 5 months away. The Derby is, it's 5 months away from the Derby right now. And so you're going to basically have maybe 3 to 4, maybe even 5 races between now and the Derby for your horse. 5 races would be pushing an awful lot between now and the Derby. You're looking between 3, 4 races before the Derby. And this is what you have to think of. From last September until the end of the month, or till the end of the year, we had, you know, we had a few Derby point races. To get into the Derby, you have to have Derby points. And they're awarded different points, you know, for different races. And, you know, it's going to be tough between now and then here into the Derby to get those Derby points. You're going to have to win, come in second or third to mount the Derby points. And that's going to be the tough thing. So what we're looking at right now is we're looking at going to Churchill Downs on the first Saturday in May. The Derby was started in May 17th, 1875. It's the Thoroughbred track. The sponsor is the Woodford Reserve Brown Foreman people. They're the ones that are putting up the money. It's 1.25 miles, which is 10 furlongs. The record is held by Secretariat in 159-4. It's a dirt surface, left-handed turns. Qualification, you got to be a 3-year-old, colt or gelding or a filly. 3-year-old. It's $3 million for the prize money, $1,860,000 to the winner. So you're really looking at something, you know, that's unique there. The Derby is something that everybody dreams about, everybody wants to get to, but not everybody can do it. Only 20 horses can get to the Derby this year, and they got to go through a qualification, you know, process to get there by running, you know, all kinds of prep races for it, as they say. What's unusual about the Derby is it's like no other race. They have 158,000 people attended the Derby in 2017. Now, when you got 158,000 people, there's not a horse on the planet that has seen that many people at a racetrack. The noise, the activity. It's a 10-day long process going leading up to the Derby. And there's just so much hoopla and so much noise and things that horse has never been experienced, you know, had the experience of. And so, you know, you're starting to look at it. Like, holy cow, you know, how's he going to react to it? How is he going to react to it? And you know, again, it's on how they get there. You can't take a horse to any track, you know, nowadays that's going to have that many people at it, you know, for just that race. And it's an all-day, you know, thing that they have to go through. You know, I tell you, I was really interested in horses before I even knew about the Derby. And then when I actually got to experience the Derby, I got to work with Derby horses and take them over to the paddock and hear my old Kentucky home coming out of the tunnel. You know, it was just amazing. You know, I could feel electricity. You know, the horse I was walking over and taking back out to the track, you know, for the jockey to, you know, to run the race, and you could just feel the electricity in it. You could feel and see the horse tense up. You know, it had no idea what was going on other than it was a race day, you know, and it was amazing to see that, you know, the people screaming and hollering and the weather conditions, whether it's, you know, sunny and nice and, you know, cold or it's cold and rainy. You know, there's just so many things that just add to it, you know, that's there. And, you know, I was excited to do that, but more importantly, I was proud to be a part of that tradition. And that's what I talk about a lot here, you know, on IEN, is tradition. Traditions is a habit that you get into. Sometimes the tradition is just like on Saturday of the Kentucky Derby, you get together with friends and neighbors and you, you know, have a barbecue and watch it on TV. Then there's other traditions. You know, there's other traditions that you might go to hot springs or you might have a party for, you know, the Arkansas Derby or for the Louisiana Derby or the Santa Anita Derby. You know, you can have those traditions at your home and not be, you know, not have to go to the track. And that's what the horse business is all about, is tradition, your daily routine, you know. And that's what's exciting about the Derby, the Preakness, and the Belmont, and the Breeders' Cup now. So those are things that you can do, and those are your own traditions. You can create by yourself. You don't have to have any input, any horse knowledge. You don't have to have anything other than Post time's usually, you know, for most of the big races around 5:30 at the day. And you know, it will be, a tradition that you can follow. Now, for example, the Derby prep races that we've been talking about, you know, that you qualify, tomorrow, we have, the Drome Stakes. It's, from Aqueduct. It's a Derby prep race, so you get 10 points for winning that. And it's a short field. It's only a 5-horse field. And this is another thing too, that on the trip on the way to the Derby. This is a very important stake race. It's the Drome Stakes at Aqueduct. The weather's going to be cool. There's a 5-horse field and you get 10 points for winning it. So we're going to see what happens with it. We've got Todd Pletcher, one of the best trainers in the country, alongside Brad Cox. We got Genter there, Linda Rice, which has done everything that you could do in New York. And then we got a trainer by the name of Russell in there. So it's a 5-horse field, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that. You know, I tell you, I'm getting excited already about the Derby now. I'm ready to get the barbecue grill out now. That's what I'm ready to do. But no, all kidding aside, you know, the Derby's about tradition. It's about the things that you do to get there. A lot of trainers have to decide what route they're going. You know, Louisiana, Arkansas, New York, California, you know, Florida type thing. And there's no really certain way, you know, to go, because every year a horse wins the Derby. It's unusual how he gets here. Todd Pletcher's good at it. He's won a couple of Derbies. Bob Baffert, you know, he's not racing in the Derby this year because of some legal issues that he has. But, you know, he's been there before, and he usually comes through California. But not necessarily. You know, he's gone to Arkansas, New York, Florida, you know, that type of thing. But he's mainly a West Coast trainer. And so, you know, that's where they come from. And like at Oakland, they had the Drome Stakes last on January 1st, which was the first race of the year that, you know, you have to try to qualify for. And it was a good race. Brad Cox won it. And Brad Cox has got horses in tomorrow. So, you know, at Aqueduct. So it's just going to show you that, you know, he's got one horse coming through Arkansas, and we'll probably, you know, run into Arkansas Derby. We've got another one that's coming through, he's got another one coming through New York. So there's two different directions right there. But Catching Freedom was a good horse. He won it by 2.5 lengths. It was a 9-horse field. The horse ran good. I tell you what, and now it's starting to get interesting. Now where does he go from here? Because basically he's going to have to win one more, maybe two more races to get his Derby points to qualify for the Derby. And, again, it goes back to, these thoroughbreds, they run about every 30 days. So, you're looking 1st of January. You would be looking at February and March that he could run. So, you're looking basically three more times. But he's got to run the races to get the Derby points. That's the big thing. You got to run the races to get the Derby points. And like I said, we got the Jerome Stakes that are coming up tomorrow. It's going to be interesting to see, how that comes out. And so you're looking at January 6th. And then you're looking at January 20th. You're looking at Tampa Bay Downs, Oaklawn, Gulfstream Park, Santa Anita. You're looking at Aqueduct again, Tampa Bay. You're looking at Sunland Park, Turfway Park. Then the first leg of the series to where it really could put you over the top if you got some Derby points would be coming up in February 17th. And that would be the Risen Star. It's a $400,000 added from the fairgrounds. We're looking at the Rebel in Oaklawn, which is $1,200,000, February 24th. Fountain of Youth at Gulfstream on March 2nd. The Gotham in Aqueduct on March 2nd, the San Felipe at Santa Anita on March 2nd, and then the Tampa Bay Derby. Those are the mid-range races that you need to get in, because that would add to your Derby points and you'd put you in a good position to actually get in the Derby. You'd probably need one more race to have enough points, to secure a spot at that top 20 position in there. Then the second leg of the series is brutal. I mean, this is really brutal because you got so many things that you got to take care of and think of. And, you don't want to think about injuries. You don't want to think about weather. You just hope that you can catch a nice, mild day, to finish out your last Derby race. And that would be the Louisiana Derby. That's March 23rd that you're looking at. You're looking at the Jeff Ruby Stakes at Turfway, March 23rd. UAE Derby at Maiden, March 23rd or March 30th. And then you're looking at the Florida Derby, March 30th. You're looking at the Arkansas Derby, March 30th. The Bluegrass Stakes is one of the, Johnny Come Lately's, desperately trying to get in, to the Derby. And a lot of horses have done that. And you're looking at the Bluegrass of Santa Anita and the Wooden Memorial, April the 6th. And that's kind of late going into the Derby because, that gives you basically 3 weeks to recover and to recoup. And the thing of it is all these prep races that you run in, there's quite a few factors into it that really make it tough on you to go. And those factors are the fact that you're running against top-notch quality races. You're running possibly against full fields of, 8, 9, 10, 12 horses, which you like to see your horse get in a full field because it gives them a little bit of experience, because when they go to the Derby, it's going to be 20 horses that they have to run against. And, that's going to be an interesting situation because all the light races that you could run now are not light races anymore. They're all Derby qualifiers, Derby points. And you got to be very careful, about what you do and how you do it. And hopefully you can, win one or two of the races and get enough points to qualify for. That's the thing that everybody thinks about now. Is what they're doing, how are they going, and again, like I'm saying, you know, tomorrow on IEN, we have the Jerome Stakes from Aqueduct, and we've got other live racing there, and to see, you know, what's going to get them there. You know, so that's going to be an interesting day tomorrow to have a good programming. And then the thing that, you know, like I said, on how they get there, the owners are the most important part of the deal. Because, you know, every time, and I know when I was working with horses that were going to run in the Derby, every time the phone rang in my house, you know, I was thinking, was there something wrong with the horse? Is there a problem? Why do I have to go back to the barn? Do I have to go back to the barn? You know, those are the things that, you start thinking about when you, get into the business. That phone is nice to have, but when it rings, you know, it could be, you know, a double-edged sword, you know, with it. And so the owner's got to think about that, same as the trainers and everybody else. But, you know, now you start to get contingency plans. Well, you know, if it's snowing in Hot Springs at Oakland Park, should we maybe, you know, wait a week and skip over and go to, you know, to Aqueduct, you know, or go to Florida or go to Kentucky, California? You know, that's the thing that they have to start worrying about is the weather. That is going to be right now, I would say, the most telltale sign of what's going to happen with your horse is the weather coming up. Because, you know, you don't know whether it's going to be snow, rain, sleet, freezing. It's going to be hot. You've got no idea what it's going to be. But you hope that you can get your horse in the best conditions. And then you got to look at it, like I said, a double-edged sword. Let's say if it's been raining where you're at, like it did in Hot Springs last year, what if you get to Churchill and it's a muddy track and it's raining? You know, then that would fit right into your training plan, even though it wasn't planned, you know, you didn't plan it. But at least you know your horse has got, you know, experience running in, you know, a condition that he'll be running in at Churchill. You know, same with what if it was all a nice, you know, sunny day in the 70s or 80s at Churchill, and you've been in Florida all winter long where your horse is used to the heat, you know. Those are things that the owners and trainers think about now, you know, when they're coming through with it. And I tell you, just to pick out the, you know, the races. And so what you do is you get a sheet and you got all 26 of the races that are scheduled for the Derby points. And so you go through and, like, say, the first one is the Iroquois in the middle of September at Churchill Downs. Okay, and then right after then, you know, a couple of weeks later, there's the Jockey Club at Churchill Downs. So now, you know, you kind of look at, well, if we win the Iroquois, do we come back real quick and run the horse in a Jockey Club and then lay the horse up for, you know, 30 days and see what happens? You know, you could do that, a possibility. But if you win the Iroquois and you don't run in the Jockey Club, you know, then you got the Breeders' Cup coming up, you know, in the first of November. You know, so you got a couple of ways that you can go there. And then after the Breeders' Cup, you know, when do you bring him back? Do you bring him back at the first of January like we have now with the, you know, with the Jerome Stakes tomorrow? You know, is that where you come out with him? You know, you could possibly hold off to, a later race down the road. You know, it's kind of hard to say, you know, where do you go with them? You know, it's tough. And it's all how they get there. And there's no right way to do it. I've seen some horses that have thoroughbreds that have run, you know, like say on the first of the month and come back, you know, 3 weeks later and win and come back 3 weeks later again and win. You know, it's very interesting to see, you know, how that scenario works out, you know, with them. So, you know, that's tough. And then you got to get with your jockeys when it starts coming into about the jockeys. And we're going to go behind the scenes with them. And we've got a good interview of a veteran jockey has been there and done that, Lafitte Penkai. He's going to tell you exactly what it's like to be a jockey, you know, and the things that you got to go through. And you know, like I said, I always thought the owner's job was the hardest, or the trainer's job selecting the races, you know, was tough. But really, when you think about it, look at the jockey. Some of these jockeys are so doggone good that you got to figure out what jockey best fits your horse. And then that jockey's got to say, hey, you know, yeah, I'll ride your horse, or he might have another horse that the jockey thinks that might be the best horse. You know, so you got to have a contingency plan for that. If I can't get my regular jockey, who's going to be my next bet, you know, for him? So that, you know, that's another situation that you get into. Then, you know, nowadays the way traffic is and everything out on the roads and the things that are out there, you got to get with your transportation people and find out, you know, when is, you know, the best time to go, you know, to get in. Do you go to Churchill Downs 3 days before the Derby, you know, a week before the Derby, or 2 weeks before the Derby? You know, and you really can't determine that until you raced your last race before the Derby and see how the horse comes out of the race. Sometimes, you know, a horse could run in a big stake race on the way to the Derby or any race, and, you know, he have a rough go of it. And then what do you do? Do you have any days you can lay him off? Do you have enough points that you can lay him off for a week or two, you know, to let him recoup? Hopefully you got enough points. And that's why these points are so important. And that's why they, Churchill spaced the qualifying races out in a pattern that, just about every trainer can, you know, jump on there and score him some, Derby points to, get them there. And I'm telling you, you know, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. And what, you know, where do you go? What do you do? How do you do it? You know, that's what everybody's thinking now. First of May's coming up pretty quick. It doesn't seem like it when you're talking about it, but when you're, you know, going somewhere like the Derby, you know, you got to start planning now. You can't wait till down the road. And, you know, I tell you, I'm already tense and worn out just thinking about all of it, you know, and just thinking about all of it. So it's going to be interesting to see. I hope everybody can go to the Derby, you know, make their plans for the Derby and see what's going on. It's a traditional thing that's celebrated by people from all over the world, especially here in the United States. It's really interesting to see all the traditions that people have. In fact, I've got another project that I'm doing. It's called the Triple Crown Tradition, coming soon to IEN. And we've got Churchill Downs, Pimlico, and Belmont. They all make up the Triple Crown. And we also have the Breeders' Cup that is part of it. And what we're going to do is we're going to have Derby Week. We're going to have a cooking show. We're going to try to get a trainer, an owner, and a jockey to bring their favorite Kentucky Derby recipes to the public, for television broadcast, and see what they do and what their tradition is. And it would be interesting to see, different nationalities there, which we will have, to see what's going on with it. And they're going to do that, and then we're going to have a winner. And we don't know if it's going to be a trainer or, you know, a jockey, you know, or an owner. But we'll have a winner, and we're going to do the same thing at Pimlico. We're going to go to Pimlico, and we're going to see who has what. More than likely, it will be a seafood dish at Pimlico, because of the Maryland seafood is just out of this world. And again, we have an owner, trainer, you know, or a jockey. And then we finish up with the Belmont. And we're going to see what kind of food we're going to have at the Belmont. Traditionally, it's like a high-end, you know, beef type of thing, seafood type of thing. no telling what we'll get out of Belmont. That'll be really surprising. And then after we have the three winners at the Breeders' Cup in California, at Del Mar, we're going to have the Triple Crown tradition broadcast, and we're going to put all three winners against each other, and they're going to select their own Breeders' Cup meal. It's not going to, like in Kentucky, it's usually barbecue, Pimlico seafood, Belmont steak. We don't know what these winners are going to come up with. It's going to be their own recipes. They're going to be cooking it themselves. And we'll have the Triple Crown tradition champion will be crowned on that Breeders' Cup Day. And this is something that we're going to, you know, have year-round, or, you know, every year that we have it. One of the things that I like on there, we're starting to get in Triple Crown recipes sent in to us. And we're going to be posting those up on our website. Right now, the first recipe we got was the Kentucky Hot Brown. Those are really good. Those are good 24/7, breakfast, noon, and night. You know, they're something that are really, really good. They're like a little slider that they make up, which is really good. So, but you know, those are the things that we're doing here. Just trying to make it better. I've got just so many things going on, and I try not to neglect, you know, anything there. Trying to make it, you know, make it nice for everybody. Like we've got posted on Dan Fogelberg, "Run for the Roses." That's a great song from, you know, from Churchill. We have the United States Navy Glee Club from Maryland singing "Maryland, My Maryland," and then we have, you know, "New York, New York" on the Belmont. You know, those are traditions, you know, that we're doing there. But basically, you know, what I'm talking about here is we're just trying to get, you know, the horse information out there is what we're trying to do. You know, it's very, very interesting to see things that go on in the horse business. Especially, you know, in the other sports, like polo, like show horses, American quarter horses. The care work that's being done with the off-track thoroughbreds, that's really a good thing to be into, the off-track thoroughbreds. A lot of these horses that race on the track, when they retire, you know, they just shut down all at once, and they're used to, you know, training every day and, you know, going to the track, you know, pretty much 7 days a week. And then when they get done, you know, what do? You know, it's really tough on a lot of them. So there's a lot of people out there now that have off-the-track thoroughbreds. In fact, we got several of them here at Sunshine Meadows. And John Beebe, an ex-jockey, that has Carriage Hill Farms and Arlington Farms here. He had a national thoroughbred, off-the-track thoroughbred champion that really adapted to the show horse industry very well. You know, so we have those kind of things that, you know, that they can do. And it's amazing to see them. You know, they get out there and they really go, they go crazy on those jumps, and they know what to do and how to do it. And it gives them a purpose, you know, something to do. If they don't go to the breeding shed, you know, then they can come to, you know, to the show arenas. A lot of them make good trail horses. There's just so many things that you can do with them. And it gives them a purpose, you know, to do that. And also, but, you know, those are the things that we're looking at here. We'd like to start getting people with some good input. Our call-in, which I should have given earlier, is 323-744-4831. And that's the great thing about doing what I do. No pressure on me. No people calling me. No people listening to me. Makes it nice because I got no critics. You know, it's all in my mind. I can walk out of here today when I get off the air and say, wow, man, I had a good show. I did good today. feel good about myself, feel good about what I did. Worst thing that could happen to me is I get a whole bunch of listeners calling me saying, boy, you shouldn't have talked about that. You should do this. You should do that. I said, man, oh, man, you know. But it's enjoyable. The horse business is enjoyable no matter how you participate in it. Like with me, I work with a lot of horses here at Sunshine Meadows, Palm Beach Downs. I work with some of the top, you know, people in the world in the business. I love it. My outlet and my fun, this is like playing golf for me, is doing a podcast. You know, I like doing that. You know, so it makes it kind of nice for what I do. You know, and you can do the same thing too. You don't, hey, look at me. I don't know a lot about broadcasting, but I got a podcast. You know, and you don't need to know a lot about, you know, horses, but you can go to the horse events. You can go to the international polo matches that might be in your area. You can go to the horse shows that might be in your area. Hey, you can even go to the sales. You can go to the sales in Ocala. You can go to the sales in Kentucky and New York and California, Arkansas. And I tell you what, that's a real good day right there. You go to the sales. They give you a book of all the horses that are in there with all their information, who they are, where they've been, what they've done. You get that catalog up, and then you watch them go into the sales ring and see how much they sell for. A lot of them sell for $1 million or more. And what I like to do about it, and a lot of people that are new to the horse industry and to the sales especially, is you can take a look at it and you can kind of guess. Well, you know, you might sit there and be talking with your wife or your kids or your friends and say, well, I think this one will go for $200,000. And it goes for $50,000. And then you say, I think this one might go for $75,000. And then it goes for $1 million. You know, and you get to start, you know, understanding the horses, the bloodlines, you know, where they come from, you know, what their parent, what the sire and the dam, you know, the parents of the horse have done. You know, it's interesting to do things like that. You know, you don't have to be an expert at it. Like I said, just go and do it. You know, that's all you got to do. You might not like it, but doesn't mean you have to, you know, go back again. But just try doing it. You know, that's all you got to do. And start watching us on how they get there. Next week, I'm going to have a video. It's going to be of Bob Baffert. Bob Baffert's probably one of the best trainers that's ever, you know, gone into, you know, the racetrack. But he's had a lot of issues. He's had a lot of issues. And he's done things that people are never going to do again. You know, but like I said, he's had issues. And so next week, we're going to go in and we're going to take a look at Bob. It's from our friends at the morning show. It'll be a Bob Baffert update. It's Churchill Downs, Inc., reheating, threatening Bob Baffert's route to the Derby. It'll be interesting to see. We're going to have two or three things on there, and they're about 30 minutes long, and to see what all's going on. But hope you tune in next week. Like I said, go to IENTV.org and you'll see what we're all about. And one of these days we're going to get a real announcer on here and make it easy for you guys to listen to. So, folks, have a good new year. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next week and hear you next week on IENTV.org.